As Raj said, I am Jeff Swedina. I'm from Brigham Young University, and I'm going to be presenting on developing irrigation zones from a field-scale crop water productivity. So, continuing the discussion on variable rate irrigation. This is a picture of Lake Mead Reservoir in Arizona and Nevada, and as you can see, the water levels are quite a bit lower than what they have been historically. Some of the drivers of this are prolonged droughts and change in weather patterns and increasing populations. And as you look, irrigation consumes about 32% of the total freshwater withdrawals, and so irrigation is under. We need to make sure that we're using this limited resource in a very productive way, especially in the western United States, where my research was located. And variable rate technology is, as was just described, has a lot of potential to help create and manage our fields, not just necessarily at the field basis, but at where place water to match crop demand spatially across large center pivots. We actually were approached by a grower in Idaho who had adopted variable rate irrigation to address his golf course. It was on the south half of his center pivot was a golf course, and he had acres of sagebrush that he didn't want to water. And so he adopted this VRI technology, and he he saved a ton of money in pumping costs because he wasn't watering a lot. But the north half of the field was a wheat potato rotation, and so he came to us with the question, how do I adopt and use this VRI technology on my crop field? This field's a little bit unique in that it doesn't have a lot of topography changes, and it also is pretty much the same soil texture and type across the entire field. So it wasn't very evident based on, easy to see measurements, ideally, what the management zones would be. So we recommended, it's called a crop water productivity analysis. We wanted to do this on a spatial scale. Most production is measured with yield, and it's the amount of production per area of land, whereas crop water productivity, which is used a lot in water-stressed environments and arid environments, is the amount of production per drop of water that was applied. And we thought that if you do this analysis, you're going to be able to look at your field and be able to see what areas are using the water that you're applying the most effectively to produce yield. And that drop, basically evapotranspiration, included in what we collected was precip, irrigation, the change in soil moisture from the beginning of the season to the end, and then also we subtracting out drainage from the root zone. The change in soil moisture, we wanted to describe this spatially across the field because this was really, besides yield, the largest spatial change within our field. And we consulted a spatial statistician, and they said we needed to take 80 sample locations, and we needed to go to the depth of the rooting zone. And what we had available were hand augers. So the first time we went out there, we had to dig about 4-foot holes all across that field, 80 of them. And on my drive back, I was seriously reconsidering my career choice. Thankfully, we got a Giddings probe, and the rest of our sampling for the fall sampling of 2016 and the sampling for this year, we were able to use a Giddings probe, which is very good for my future health. So these are the maps that were interpolated. The top left is the spatial variability of the water removed from the soil system from the beginning to the end of the growing season. And then the top right is the spatial variation of the seasonal evapotranspiration. So that includes precipitation and irrigation and accounting for the drainage. The bottom left is the yield variability. And that bottom right is the spatial variation of the crop water productivity. So we had this map, and we started looking at it. And I'm going to point out two areas that we really keyed in on. And the darker blue areas are where the most yield was produced per drop of available water. So these are the areas that are using the water very effectively to produce yield. Whereas in these lower areas, you applied the same amount of water, but your yield did not respond as it did in the other locations of the field. And so this brought two questions. First, if you're applying, what happens if you apply more water to where your crop water productivity is already high? Will your crop water productivity to continue to rise as your yield does? And then the other question was, where there's low crop water productivity, in essence, your yield did not respond, so you applied an excess amount of water. If you cut back the water in those locations, will your crop will you be more efficient in your water use, and will your yield stay relatively the same? So these were the two main questions we went about and trying to answer in the following year. And the way that we did that is we looked at all of our historic yield that was available. We had 3 years. We looked at yield trends, and then we looked at our crop water productivity map, and we used a linear relationship between the two to develop these irrigation zones. And we went simple. We went high and we went low, and then we did the grower standard practice. And we wanted to see some differences, so we actually went plus or minus 30% of the irrigation. And the way that went is whenever the grower went out and watered, or he deemed it time to water, the variable rate irrigation center pivot just made it possible so that our zones got plus or minus 30%. And the seasonal totals are on the left-hand side. And then we went out and we collected the change in soil moisture again. You can see the spatial variability there. The total evapotranspiration, which you can see the differences between the irrigation zones, but you can also see there's variability even between those within those zones that we created. And then we collected yield and our crop water productivity map as well. And this, you can see it spatially varies within each zone. And I have the zones outlined over it. And we used a paired t-test to compare our high to our grower standard practice and our low to our grower standard practice. First, I'd like to talk a little bit about the yields. As you would expect, the highest yield was in the irrigation zone that received the most amount of water, and the low rate produced the least amount of yield, and both of those were significant. But what we were interested in was maximizing the amount of crop water productivity, not necessarily yield. So, looking and comparing our low zone to our grower standard practice, there was no statistical difference between our crop water productivities, meaning our crop water productivity was equal to the grower standard practice, even though he applied up to 30% more water. And then looking at our high zone, we were statistically different, but our high zone actually was less effective. It had a lower crop water productivity. Which would be, we weren't completely sure going into it, and we had hopes that it would continue to increase, but it didn't. So, first off, what can you conclude from this? First, we were working with the grower the entire time. This was an on-site. Grower was very much in mind in what we were doing, and he found what we did very helpful. The crop water productivity map broke up the field in ways that he hadn't seen before and made him think differently about the water dynamics of his field. Second, even with our changed irrigation zones and we increased water in some areas, because we did that, we still conserved 7% of the water that he would have applied. So he was saving water costs on water. And then back to our two questions. The high zone, we did increase yields, but it was at the cost of crop water productivity of the water management. And then the low zone, we reduced where we reduced the irrigation rate, the yield was lower, but our crop water productivity was high compared to the grower standard practice. So what does this mean? It means that the grower will probably have to do an economic decision between if he wants to maximize on the water that he's applying or if he wants to maximize on the yield. So if he wants to maximize, not yield, the land that he has available, and that kind of depends on water prices. But remember, this is extremes. We were affecting up to 30% of the irrigation. And so further work needs to be done on different rates. And this was not an answer to all the questions of variable rate irrigation, but it's an idea that we like to put forward into looking at these different zones and how effective these zones are. I'd just like to say thanks to those that helped, especially the farmers, and open it up to questions. Just got 5 minutes.
We still have 5 minutes for questions. Question for Jeff.
So is this only done on the wheat years?
Yeah, so it was consecutive wheat years. Yeah, so it was just done on the 2 years of wheat.
And how would the farmer adjust for the potato year?
We don't know that answer because wheat behaves completely different than potatoes. Potatoes are very shallow rooted crop and very inefficient with water and different nutrients. So we actually don't know the answer to that. Something we're looking forward to working in.
Any outliers weather-wise in those 2 years that you predicted?
No, we didn't. They were somewhat fairly similar. The grower put, I think, within 2 centimeters of, like, between the 2 years, they were very similar in irrigation.
Okay, a question here and a question back there.
How did you say you did the drainage?
We did an ET model. So based on our soil samples, we estimated the drainage. And there was only, in our estimations, there was only drainage in the first year, and it was in the first several weeks when there was some rainfall right after we sampled.
Was that excess ET?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So we assumed if there was, the rooting zone was full, based on our model, we used the Penman Monteith model, and we assumed it was being moved through the root system. Question in the back?
George?
Good presentation. Yeah, that was my question as well, so you answered it. Thank you.
Okay.
So I hope you're not done with all your analysis. I noticed that you have done a pair T test, which is oversimplistic approach, and I heard that there's a geostatistician on the team. Mm-hmm. So are you going to do spatial analysis to really look at the differences? Or
yeah, And to get ready for the conference, we just did the paired T test. And we consulted with one, and they said if you're really close to your zone boundaries, the paired T test works fairly well. But we are going to do geostatistical analysis as well.
One more question, and then let's go to the next.
So you mentioned that the field was pretty uniform. But in taking your soil sample, did you see any variability in layers and sections?
Yeah, the biggest thing we saw was depth of topsoil. Which we think plays a pretty big role in the water dynamics. So that was the biggest thing. We haven't dove a ton into the variability of a lot of the soil characteristics.
Did you use an EC and kind of delineate topsoil depth based on examples that you've taken already?
Yeah, we looked at some of the EC data that was available and the zones that were given us from one of the consulting firms, and we haven't done a ton of work with it.
Well, thank you, Jeff.